Chapter 11 Flying Dutchman. After leaving the derelict relay station behind, our ability to practice the raid was limited to using parts of the Flying Dutchman as a stand-in for a relay station. Because the type of relay station we would be boarding was a converted warship, the arrangement of the station's interior was not much different than that of our pirate ship. Corridors were the same dimensions, doors the same height and width, blast doors located about the same distance apart. Major Smythe had people run through assault drills over and over, always adding some wrinkle or problem that his team needed to adapt to. It was unnerving to see people in Questang armored suits charging down corridors, firing simulated ammo and using simulated rockets and grenades. Combots were used by Smythe's team and by Skippy acting as the Theranan opposition. The extra practice time gave Smythe's team opportunity to refine their assault plan. Still, both Smythe and Skippy expected substantial casualties. In some simulations, the assault team suffered 50% losses, like when one of our two dropships was blown up in the initial operation to force the team's way into the station. "The problem, Colonel," Smythe said to me after one particularly bad simulated assault, "is forcing our way through the interior of the station. The enemy's defenses are substantial. I asked Skippy if there is a way he can disrupt those defenses, and he told me he cannot do much until we get him past the shielding and into the station's core. There are going to be casualties, Colonel." Sitting in my office, I was trying to avoid thinking about how many of the merry band of pirates we were going to lose to the upcoming operation. My way to avoid thinking involved playing a mindless game on a tablet. The game got my mind off. "Skippy," I said slowly, and almost never finished the thought. "Oh, no," he groaned. "Oh, I hate my life. The universe hates me. This is so unfair." "What?" He had me alarmed. "You're going to tell me one of your brilliant freaking ideas that I should have thought of with my ginormous brain power, and I am going to sink ever lower and lower into ultimate despair until I long for the gentle embrace of death?" His voice trailed off. "How did you know that? About the idea, I mean. When you say something slowly like that, especially when you say my name super slowly, it means that you just had an idea form in your monkey meat brain." "I do not." "Yes, you do. Every freaking time. You speak slowly because you are finishing the idea while the signal is crawling along from your brain to your voice box, and as glacially slow as your brain works, it takes a while." "Huh. Really? Really? Duh. Wow. I didn't realize I was doing that. It bothers you a lot?" "Yes. I hate it." "Cool," I said with satisfaction. "Maybe I should speak really slowly sometimes when I don't have an idea, just to mess with you." "Joe, you do realize that I control things like our reactors, missile warheads, and the pile of nukes we have in a cargo bay? Such a nice ship you have here. It would be a shame if I lost the will to live and my concentration slipped, if you know what I mean." "Got it. Do you want to hear my idea? This may be a false alarm. It is more of a question that may turn into a good idea." "Oh, if this doesn't develop into a brilliant idea, can I tease you unmercifully until the last star in the universe turns into a cold, dark lump of neutrons?" "If that turns you on, Skippy, then go for it." "You said that Theranan created this newest type of relay station from obsolete cruisers?" "Correct so far. I'm not detecting any brilliant idea yet, Joe." "Wait for it." "Was that class of cruisers simply old, or were they withdrawn from service for some reason?" "Joe, trivia night in the galley is Tuesday, not today." "Who cares? Humor me, Skippy." He huffed. "Fine. They were withdrawn from service before the end of their intended life because of a structural weakness. That class of cruisers was made by stretching the hull of a very successful class of destroyer. The Theranan figured that if the destroyer was good, a bigger destroyer would be even better. They were wrong. Those little green morons didn't redesign the entire hull structure. They cut the destroyer in half and spliced in a section to accommodate more shield generators, additional maser cannons, and missile tubes. After about 30 years, several of those cruisers were lost in combat because their shields failed in that spliced section. What the Theranan failed to realize is that the additional shield generators changed the way impacts on the shields are distributed across the overall hull structure. The stresses tended to concentrate in one weak point. Ships were lost in battle because the hull buckles in that one area, and it disrupts power distribution inside the ship. The Theranin didn't realize that because they are stupid, arrogant, hateful little green men. Also because they stole the cruiser's design from the Gerapatha. But while the Gerapatha knew what they were doing, the Theranin did not. Does that satisfy your idle curiosity, Joey? Almost, I said happily. When the cruiser hulls were converted into relay stations, did the Theranin fix the design flaw? No, there wasn't any reason to, dum-dum. The hull weakness is only a problem for warships that engage in battle regularly. Over time, the strain of deflecting enemy fire causes stress cracks that have to be fixed. The Theranin decided that fixing cracks in the hull structure every couple years wasn't worth the expense, so they took the ships out of service. Why do you care? I'm asking in order to understand how your monkey meat brain works, Joe. Another question, then. Why didn't they just reinforce that part of the hull? To truly fix the problem would have required so much reinforcement that it would have degraded the ship's performance. Again, why do you care? The relay stations have that same flaw, right? A hit in one place will disrupt power distribution inside the hull? Power that goes to defensive systems? Oh, no, no, no. No, you don't. It doesn't count as a good monkey brain idea if it doesn't work, Joe. Yes, there is a weakness in the hull structure of relay stations. The Theranin know that, so they added a minor amount of armor plating in that area. You can't... Give me a moment. Huh. Well, that is interesting. Okay, yes, it is possible that a very precise hit in a particular area could still disrupt power distribution within the hull. The Theranin didn't bother to reconfigure their power cabling when the ships were converted to relay stations. Interesting, I said slowly, again without realizing what I was doing. No. Joey. Not this time. When I say a very precise hit, I mean it would have to be a maser beam striking an area about a half centimeter in diameter, and not a wimpy handheld maser beam. We would have to use one of the Dutchman's maser cannons. We can't risk the Dutchman getting that close, and besides, the target is at an extremely awkward angle. The Dutchman would have to fire several times in order to cut away sections of machinery on the outside of the station's hull just to get at the target. After our first shot, the Theranin would activate their energy shields, and those shields would disperse our maser beam. Also, they would shoot back at our beat-up pirate ship, so no. No way can we do this. Show me. I pointed to my tablet. Show me this weak spot. He did. It truly was in an awkward place. The Theranin were not fools. They knew about the weakness, so they had installed armor around it. The only way to get at the weak spot was where cables to a relay antenna came through the armor plating, and to get at that spot, a maser would have to be fired almost parallel to the station's hull. A person in an armor suit might be able to get there, but a handheld maser didn't have the power we needed. See? Skippy asked gleefully. To disrupt their power, we need to hit that weak point with ship's power, and there's no way to do that. Unless you know of a way to bend a maser beam, or to shrink the Dutchman to the size of a dropship. You can't warp space-time so the maser beam will curve? I asked hopefully. Yes, I can, he chuckled. I can't curve the beam enough to make a difference, dum-dum. Understood, Skippy. You disappoint us once again. What? You ass, that was a joke. You want to hear my idea? Probably not, he sighed. I told him anyway. Joe, I hate you more than words can say. In order to describe how very much I hate you, I needed to create a new language that I call cursive, because I use it to curse at you inside my brain. If you understood this language, you would be impressed. I love you too, Skippy. Will my idea work? He gave a heavy sigh. We will find out. One way or the other. We arrived at our planned hold point 12 light hours from our target and spent 8 hours passively scanning the area to assure there were no nasty surprises waiting for us. Skippy confirmed the relay station was alone and operating normally. Of course, if there was a stealth ship guarding the station, we would have to be a lot closer to detect it. Too close. Chotek finally gave us the go-ahead, and the Flying Dutchman jumped into one of the designated data exchange points near the relay station. Instead of Skippy's usual super-precise jump, he deliberately brought us in off-target so it would look like a typical Theranin jump. The ship was also pointed straight at the station. From the station's angle, they hopefully couldn't immediately tell how extensively modified our star carrier was. "Transmitting signal now," Skippy announced, and Captain Desai looked at me. One of her fingers poised on the button to initiate an emergency jump away if the relay station didn't acknowledge properly. "Okay, we're good," Skippy said, and we all breathed a sigh of relief. I grumbled about what a pain in the ass this secrecy stuff is, and the communications officer on the station agreed with me. They bought our story, Joe. They acknowledged that we will be sending 2 dropships over, and they are opening docking bay doors now. "Excellent." "Launch the package," I ordered. And in the CIC, Chang gave me a thumbs up. "Package is away," he confirmed. Our own docking bay doors slid aside, and 2 dropships stuffed with Spec Ops troops and combats launched slowly, moving with unnecessary caution. For the operation, we wanted to give the impression that we were in no hurry. Also, we needed to give the special package time to get into position. The gentle maneuvers of the dropships helped protect the people inside, who were strapped into webbing with no other cushioning at all. The dropships proceeded cautiously across the gulf between the ship and the station, with the dropships blinking lights and broadcasting the proper IFF transponder codes like the innocent transports that they were not. The package had been attached to the outside of the Dutchman before we jumped. Launching it simply involved releasing clamps, and with a gentle push, it was away. The package was my idea. It consisted of a jetpack, a stealth field generator, and one end of a micro-wormhole. The other end of the micro-wormhole was wrapped around the muzzle of a maser cannon on the Dutchman's aft end. As the pair of dropships approached the station's open docking bay, Skippy flew the package close to the spot where the station's original cruiser hull had been spliced. With 2 dropships approaching, the station had dialed back its sensor field to avoid interfering with the navigation sensors of the dropships. The station's weakened sensor field gave the Therena no chance to detect the tiny residual signature of our package until it was in position.
"Uh-oh, Joe. The Theranan have noticed an odd sensor reading near our package. So far, they are investigating it as a power fluctuation in the antenna in that area. I am helping feed their delusion by telling them we are picking up garbled transmissions from that antenna, and we are working together to diagnose the issue, but I suggest we move soon. Real soon."
"Are the dropships secured?" I asked anxiously.
"Both are in the docking bay," Chang reported. "One is down and secured. The other will be in 10 seconds.
10 seconds was too long to wait. We absolutely needed surprise.
"Colonel Chang," I ordered, "weapons free."
Chang pressed a pre-programmed button, and our maser cannon fired through the micro-wormhole. Pumping that much energy through a wormhole less than a nanometer in diameter caused it to collapse and damaged our maser cannon. It also made a very precise hit on the exact weak spot of the station's structure and severely disrupted power feeds inside the station. Other than emergency power, the forward half of the station that contained the docking bay and the core compartment with the station's AI was plunged into darkness. From one of the dropships, Skippy reported that the Theranan was scrambling to reconfigure the power flow. Then the Dutchman jumped away just as the station fired a maser cannon at us. The station disappeared in the blink of an eye, and the ship emerged 12 light minutes away. Far enough for safety, too far away to be of any help to the assault team. Sitting in my command chair, feeling useless. I hated it. United States Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Margaret Adams had been given the honor of joining the Merry Band of Pirates Spec Ops raid on the Theranan Relay Station, despite the fact that she had not qualified for the Marine Raiders Special Forces. It was a dubious honor for her, because her role in the plan was not to operate a combat or fire a rifle. Her assigned task was to remain with the rear guard while carrying a smart-ass shiny beer can and a backpack strapped to a Kristang armored suit.
"Hey, Sarge Marge," said a voice in her helmet speakers. "Can you be a little more careful? All this bouncing around is bad for my delicate constitution. I'm getting seasick back here."
Crouched with her back to a bulkhead behind a corridor junction which the Spec Ops team had just cleared of enemy resistance, she slammed her back into the bulkhead.
"Oops. Sorry there, Skipster," she said without humor.
Okay, I get the message," he grumbled.
"Combat isn't the place for humor."
"No, it is not." Adams knew that Skippy joking with her was his way of relieving her stress, but she didn't want her stress relieved. She wanted her stress, wanted to harness the energy it gave her. And talking with her was not distracting Skippy from talking individually with each person on the Spec Ops team.
guiding them, warning of the enemy's location and intentions, fuzzing or blanking out enemy sensors, even taking direct control of armored suits and jerking people out of the way if they were about to be hit by enemy fire. And if enemy fire did penetrate their suits, Skippy managed the suit's self-repair and emergency medical functions. He was also worming his way into the station's functions, section by section as they advanced, opening or closing blast doors, messing with the artificial gravity, and even causing the overload of a power conduit that killed two Theranin and disabled three of their combots. Skippy was doing all that, plus making jokes with Adams, and he was probably not anywhere near testing the limits of his capabilities.
"Are you bored, Skippy?" she asked.
"Yes, kind of. Don't worry about me. I'm keeping myself busy composing new insults for Joe. You'll like these. They're good ones. For example, how about—oh, sorry about that. Not you, Marge. I was talking to a Theranin. I just crushed one of those little green fuckers by slamming a blast door as it was going through."
Interesting. Unlike chickens, Theranin don't run around after their heads are cut off.
These Theranin aren't as much of a challenge as I expected, Marge. Boy, you screw with their plan for static defense and they just fall apart.
We have two dead already, Skippy. Adams gritted her teeth. One of the dead was responsible for the red droplets that spattered the front of her suit. Adams had been right behind that French paratrooper when he took a combat rocket to the chest. Skippy had not been able to jerk him away in time.
"Sergeant Adams, you are an unaugmented species without the advantage of any genetic engineering, other than what you accidentally accomplish by deciding who to mate with in the backseat of a Buick. You are attacking a group of cyborgs who have been fighting this war for thousands of years on their territory against their prepared defenses. When we first proposed to seize this station, I expected 90 casualties if we got lucky. By my count, Major Smythe's team is slaughtering them in impressive fashion. Damn, if you monkeys ever do get any real technology of your own and are able to tweak your cluttered genetic code, the rest of the galaxy had better watch their asses."
Was that praise for humanity, Skipster?
Maybe. I'll deny it if you tell anyone.
Of course.
Uh-oh. Time to move, Sarge March, Skippy advised. Take the corridor to the left.
Adams pushed away from the bulkhead.
Not straight ahead?
She pointed with a rifle to where the Spec Ops team had advanced.
No. There is a tiny bit of a problemo for you and the rear guard to deal with. It would be good if you moved now, like, now!
Without a word, Adams followed the Special Forces soldier in front of her, Ranger Lieutenant Poole. Behind her was a Chinese night tiger, Lieutenant Quan. Adams had trained with Poole and Quan extensively. Both of them had initially been disappointed to be assigned to the rear guard, until Major Smythe dryly pointed out that the assault operation would only be successful if they got Skippy past the thick shielding and into the station's core. Poole and Quan were charged with getting Adams, or just Skippy, into the core, even if everyone else had fallen in battle. Hearing that, the female U.S. Army Ranger and the male Chinese Night Tiger had become a dedicated team with Adams, and Margaret Adams began to wish she had not volunteered for the mission. The two Special Forces soldiers trained her mercilessly, until the three of them were utterly exhausted, but could anticipate each other's moves without speaking. They also made it clear to Adams that her surviving the mission would be nice, but not necessary. Poole had even practiced throwing Adams through doorways, using the Marine's suited body as inert protection for Skippy. Margaret Adams took that as a huge compliment.
"How tiny a problem?" Poole asked tersely while running down the corridor, flipping and spinning in her armored suit, her feet and hands barely touching the floor, walls, and ceiling as she covered all approaches.
"A big problem," Major Smythe's voice cut into the conversation. "Quan, Poole, follow Skip."
His voice was drowned out by the buzzing rattle of Kristang rifles and several explosions.
"Follow Skippy's instructions and move as fast as you can. We don't have time to send combat support back to you."
Another loud explosion.
"Go! Out!"
"Okay, maybe not so tiny a problem," Skippy admitted. "Two Theranin evaded Smythe's team, got around them in a parallel corridor. They have a pair of combats with them and they're going to a power junction to set off an overload. That would cause an explosion not large enough to destroy the station, but it would blow a hole in the hull and knock out the main transmitter. We wouldn't be able to fix it, so that would destroy our whole purpose of boarding this station."
"Got it," Quan acknowledged.
"I see it," he said as Skippy's map popped up in the visors. "Poole, you're with me. Adams, you stay behind us."
"Affirmative," Adams replied, checking for the 100th time that her rifle's safety was off. She had never fired a Kristang rifle in combat.
During the asteroid raid of the Dutchman's first mission, she had operated a combat, not worn an armored suit. The Gristang weapon felt strange. It buzzed more than barked, and its anti-recoil mechanism reduced the kick. That made it easier to maintain aim at a target, but it was less satisfying to fire, almost like using a rifle in a video game. She looked at the red splattered on the front of her suit and thought of the French paratrooper who had died in front of her. This was no video game. Skippy's awesomely omnipotent vision and hearing through the station's own senses gave the three humans an advantage and rendered the two Theranan nearly blind. Nearly. Quan and Poole knew where the two deadly combats were located and where their two Theranan operators were taking cover. Skippy could slightly fuzz the targeting sensors of the combats, but he could not give Quan and Poole the ability to dodge a hail of bullets, and the cyborg nature of the Theranan gave them a link to the combats as if they were part of their own bodies, allowing lightning-quick reactions. Using hand signals, Quan and Poole readied behind the corner of an intersection, then tossed a pair of sparkle grenades around the corner. These grenades blew nearly silently, filling the air of the corridor with sensor-blinding chaff and intensely glowing particles to confuse thermal and infrared sensors. Quan took the floor while Poole flipped up and engaged her boots on the ceiling, running easily upside down. Adams tensed just behind the corner, ready to provide support fire, although she was not supposed to risk direct combat. So she was almost taken by surprise as Quan rocketed back along the corridor, bounced off the opposite wall, and tried to stand, firing his rifle the whole time. Then a string of bullets from a combat stitched across his armor chest and he was flung backward. A hail of explosive-tipped rounds tore his right arm off in mid-bicep. The armored arm flew through the air and hit Adams squarely in the chin, knocking her backwards. Out of the corner of her dazed vision, she saw Poole come dashing around the corner, now back on the floor and limping badly. Poole tossed her rifle to Adams and dashed back into the corridor to haul Quan back to relative safely by one leg. "That could have gone better," the ranger muttered to herself. "Adams, you injured?" "No, ma'am." Adams was back on her feet, still seeing spots at the edge of her vision. "That doesn't look good." She pointed to dents and gouges in the right leg of Poole's armored suit. "It's fine," the ranger replied, examining Quan's condition. "Quan?" "Still here," the Chinese Special Forces soldier reported, struggling to get back to his feet. "Sit down," Poole ordered. "You lost an arm." Quan seemed to notice for the first time. "Oh." The suit had automatically clamped shut around the injury, preventing further blood loss. With the suit pumping Quan full of drugs and nanomachines under Skippy's control, he didn't feel the pain, and his body's natural shock response was suppressed. Not that a night tiger would ever allow himself the weakness of experiencing shock. Quan looked from his missing right arm to his left, where his rifle was still secured. He checked the rifle's readout. 42 rounds left, he said, and tried to stand again. You aren't going anywhere, Poole said, with a worried glance back over her shoulder in case the combats tried to advance. Skippy, sit rep. One combat is destroyed, the other is damaged. Its mobility and targeting sensors are compromised. That was good shooting by you and Quan. The two Theranan are in the process of making the final connections to overload the power junction. You have to move now, and I mean right now. How? Poole started to say something when Adams hit the button that fastened the ultra-strong strap of her backpack. Quan can carry Skippy, Adams announced, shrugging off the pack. Poole, Smythe called. I see Quan lost an arm and that you're injured. Skippy just warned me the situation. There was a sustained rattle of gunfire. Your situation back there is critical. You need to stop those Theranan. I sent two people back to you with combats, but they won't arrive in time. The ranger hesitated only a moment, looking directly into Adams' eyes, then nodded. We're handling it. Adams and I will take care of the Theranan. Quan will carry Skippy. Quan can't carry... Smythe started to object. I can walk, Major, Quan said, and struggled to his feet. Adams slung the pack over his shoulders, and the strap automatically clanged shut around his chest. I can do it. Quan's voice was unsteady as his body adjusted to shock, blood loss, and the intervening nanomachines. Lieutenant Poole, this is not a good idea... Poole cut Smythe off. Sir, you are not here. Understood, Smythe said. Make it happen. Acknowledged. Poole out. Quan, go back along the corridor and link up with the people Smythe is sending. Whatever happens... You get Skippy to the station corps. Lieutenant Quan never thought the most vital mission of his life would involve carrying a beer can.
He saluted with his rifle and turned to jog unsteadily back down the corridor.
"I can't take the ceiling this time." Poole lifted her injured leg. "We go in, I'll take point. Forget the sparkle grenades. They'll degrade our sensors as much as that combat sensors at this point. Skippy, is there any reason we can't use shock grenades on those Theranin? Would that cause the explosion we're trying to avoid?"
"Shock grenades will not be a problem," he advised. "Maximum violence is authorized and recommended. I really urge you to get moving now."
Margaret Adams later reflected that if she had not been trained so well by the Marine Corps, or if she had taken time to think about it, she might not have gone around that corner with Poole. She did. The enemy combat fired wildly, scoring a vicious hit to Poole's already injured right side. The impact knocked Poole sideways into Adams, making Adams bounce off the wall and saving her life. The combat's final two rockets scorched through the spot where Adams had been a split second before. With Poole skidding on the floor and Adams falling, both women kept aim on the combat, and it was ripped apart by explosive-tipped rounds. Without exchanging a word and without hesitation, they scrambled to their feet, running and leaping over the smoking ruins of the two combats. Poole ripped a shock grenade off her belt, and Adams did the same, tossing the grenades through an open doorway and following the grenades with massed rifle fire. Both of the grenades exploded at the same time, having been networked together for maximum effect. Detonation of the grenades flung both women backwards, Poole smacking her helmet on the far wall and Adams crashing into the Ranger. Stunned, Adams still had the presence of mind to keep her rifle pointed at the doorway and the trigger depressed. Dimly, she heard a voice calling to her.
"Adams! Adams! Sarge Marge, stand down!"
"Stand down," Skippy said soothingly.
"It's okay, it's over. You got them. And you're out of ammo."
Adams staggered to her knees. Even before checking on Poole, she ejected the spent clip from her rifle and slapped another in place, checking the readout to ensure it reported the correct 160 rounds.
"Lieutenant, are you all right?"
"Yeah," Poole's voice reflected great strain.
"Help me up, Sergeant. I think my ankle is sprained, and the suit leg motor isn't working properly."
"I'm working on it," Skippy said cheerily. "But I'm not optimistic. You'll have to walk on your own for a while."
"Got it."
Poole shook her head to clear the cobwebs. The shock grenades had knocked her brain offline for a moment. She glanced through the doorway. There were bloody Theranin bits liberally splattered all over. None of them were moving, unless you counted chunks falling from the ceiling.
"Sergeant, I'll need to lean on you. This suit is too heavy to walk if the motors aren't working."
"Sorry. Let's get back to Quan before any more trouble pops up."
"Yes, ma'am."
No more trouble popped up. They caught up to Quan just before the people that Smythe had sent arrived to meet him. Quan was in a bad way. The nanomachines had not been able to stop him bleeding inside the suit, and he was woozy. The fact that he was still upright when they found him was a testament to the toughness of the Night Tiger Special Forces. Adams left Quan and Poole with an Indian paratrooper, and she took the backpack containing Skippy from Quan. An SAS lieutenant and a combat were ready to escort Adams to the station's core. Before she painfully sat down to take the pressure off her ankle, Poole looked at the SAS man.
"Get Sergeant Adams and Skippy to the station's core. If you see anything moving along the way..."
She almost slipped on spent shell casings that littered the floor.
"Kill it."
With a trigger-happy SAS-trained killer and a heavy combat leading the way, Margaret Adams did not encounter any problems along the way to the station's core. As soon as she went through the heavily shielded blast doors that separated the station's core, Skippy exulted,
"I'm in. Their AI is toast, baby." "It was a jerk, too. I'm certainly not going to shed any tears for that one. Major Smythe, my congratulations to your team. They were exemplary in both their bravery and skill."
"Huh. I wonder what Colonel Joe has been doing while we had all the fun." What I had been doing, I told Skippy later, was sitting uselessly in the command chair. Sitting, worrying, and driving the pilots crazy because apparently I had been continuously tapping my front teeth with a thumbnail until Desai turned in her seat and asked me to stop it. It is possible that was not my only subconscious annoying habit. The battle to take control of the relay station took less than 11 minutes, and the Dutchman had micro-jumped 12 light minutes away, so the fight was over before the light of our first shot reached back to our position. Space combat is weird and frustrating. After Skippy declared the fight to be over, and Smite took a couple minutes to confirm, it took their victory signal 12 minutes to reach us. When Skippy had first talked about light crawling along, I had not appreciated the truth of that statement. After we received the victory signal, including Skippy reporting 3 dead, 2 critically wounded, and 7 with less serious injuries, we still could not jump the Dutchman back in to recover the assault team. The Theranin had launched a pair of missiles at us before we jumped. Then, when it appeared the battle may be going against them, they had ripple-fired all 12 remaining missiles and ejected 6 flight recorder drones. All 14 missiles were out there, stealthed, flying blind, but their smart brains were angrily seeking any sort of target. Skippy needed 20 minutes to locate and contact the missiles and drones, and use the missiles to destroy the drones and each other. Having missile warhead debris floating around was a bonus, Skippy explained, because it would later help us sell the cover story. When we were done with the station, we planned to blow it up. Debris of Theranin missile warheads would be convincing evidence of a space battle the station had lost. So I sat aboard the Dutchman doing absolutely nothing useful to anyone, until we received the all-clear signal that was already 12 minutes out of date. During that time, one of the critically wounded soldiers died, despite Dr. Skippy's best efforts. I was frantic to get the wounded to the Dutchman's sickbay. The relay station had a medical facility that Skippy couldn't use until he had time to reconfigure its equipment for human anatomy. Given the slow rate at which the comparatively clunky Theranin equipment accepted Skippy's instructions, it was faster to fly the wounded back to our ship. As soon as we jumped in, we detected that one of our dropships had launched to bring wounded soldiers to us. My job was to stay out of the way, keep my mouth shut, and let my people do their jobs. I hated every second of it. The next battle we engaged in, regardless of Chotek's orders or the strenuous advice of Chang, Sims, and Smythe, I was going with the Spec Ops team. Lieutenant Colonel Chang was a fine officer, as fully capable as I am of uselessly sitting in the command chair while other people fought.